Hey, welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Make sense out of the senseless. And if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining me from wherever you're listening around the world. And first and foremost, thanks to the subscribers of the Life 2.0 podcast. I have people that have been supporting this show going on 3 years, and I cannot thank you enough for the $20 that you throw in every month, which is $5 a week, comes down to 66 cents a day to listen to me rant, rave, and ramble on about things that I think are important to some greater or lesser degree. And again, thank you so much for doing that. Every time I see this little notification come up from Stripe, which is the payment service, I am reminded I have work to do. You know, I'm the host of an international radio show slash podcast called The Bridge. I get paid to do that. I have rotating co-hosts in Beijing, China. We talk about big things and little things and everything in between our countries and music and so many similarities and differences that we have in order to bring the world together. One conversation at a time. That's kind of the idea that I came up with. So that keeps me really, really busy, and I'm thankful to have it this late in my career. But this Life 2.0 podcast thing, this is where I could really air it out because I don't have any restrictions as far as, you know, radio or anything like that or anybody listening in except me. I'm kind of running the deal here. This is it. It begins and ends with me. If I want to say shit, I just say shit. You know, that's a little kind of a freeing thing. So can't say shit on the bridge. On the bridge, I say shirt, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. But this podcast today, while there have been things marinating in the back of my brain for about a week since I did the last one, that were of some sort of inquisition and inquiry into the value of things in life and all that goes around all that, and it had a little bit to do with an article that I saw about people getting paid to take the COVID-19 vaccine. And I just found that fascinating. But I was marinating on it thinking, okay, now how do I turn at this and what am I going to say about this? Because the one thing that I set out to do when I got in radio in 1997 was to, as you hear me open the show, to attempt to make sense out of the senseless, to find these absurdities, you know, that are buried in the obvious things in our life that we can see them so much that they become oblivious almost because they're around so much and we tend to get numb to what's going on. So my job has always been to kind of shake the jar a little bit and see what else we can find in there. Go beyond the headlines to the lifelines. That show is not what this one's about today. What this is about is a little bit more of an impromptu outing, and it is what it feels like to go from a 62-year-old man when the doorbell rings to a 12-year-old boy. That's exactly what happened this afternoon. Let me explain. You're going to hear some noises and stuff, by the way. I don't have my studio. It's really hot here in Chicago, and I don't have all the air conditioning in and stuff like that yet, and it's kind of wide open, so you may hear birds and planes, and there's a guy riding his motorcycle, so enjoy the ambient noise in the background. So the doorbell rings, and there's a big box on the porch for me, and I knew what it was, and I was so excited to get it. And I opened up the box, and there it was exactly as advertised and prescribed. And before I tell you what it is, I want to just kind of underscore the fact that when you get to a certain, at least for me, when you get to a certain age in life, not a lot thrills you anymore. You kind of seen it all, man. I've been around the world and done a lot of things and met a lot of people and have a very full life. And rare is it that I get excited about stuff like, man, did you see that? Every now and again. And that's unfortunate, but that is, I think, the way life becomes for people over time. And it kind of gets, you know, it knocks out the joy in us to a greater or lesser degree. And so I've always strived to find that, but it gets harder and harder as I get older. So for years, I've been looking for a football helmet. Now, if you listen to this show or listen to any other stuff I've done for years or read any of my books, you know, I played midget football when you could say midget football without offending anybody. I'm not here to offend anybody that's a midget, a dwarf, or a small person. That's just what they called it. Deal with it. So midget football when I was a little kid, then I played park district football, then I played high school football, then I played college football, and I played 5 or 6 years, getting a little foggy after so many hits in the head, 5 or 6 years of semi-pro football. So I know football. And depending on who you ask, I was pretty good at what I did, which was playing defense, if at all possible, because they always stuck me in the offense, which I get. I played tight end, had a good set of hands, I was a bigger kid, you know, I could run pretty well, you know, so I fit into the offensive scheme, but man, I just wanted to hit people and play defense. And I can remember in high school arguing just to the edge of arguing with a coach, which isn't something you should do or take lightly, because you're really going to get your ass handed to you if you screw up, about playing defense. Oh, come on, coach. So my defensive coach was a great guy, the late, great Ray Smith. And he was an offensive coach, line coach, and a defensive coach for the line. And Coach Prio kind of handled the receivers and the backs, so to speak. So our guys were the grunts, and Coach Prio's guys were the bird legs. And I didn't want to be a bird leg. I don't want anything to do with being any bird leg. I wanted to be with the grunts. So playing tight end is right on the edge of being a bird leg to me. Even though for the most time we were blocking, and I played on the offensive line next to the tackle, to me, I was like just, I was a bird leg. I got nothing to do with that. What I wanted to do was be on the other side of the line as a defensive end. No bird legs on the defensive line, brother. I'm here to tell you. So eventually, I think it was in my junior year, I played a little bit of both. In my junior year, I played mostly offense. But then in my senior year, I got to play both again. Thrilled. And I found out later, one of the reasons I had to play tight end is that the guy that played next to me on offense wasn't real bright. He couldn't remember the frickin' plays. The late, great Al Walschlager, God rest his soul, was 6'4", about 245 pounds, but he just didn't remember the plays. So I was kind of like the guy that had to tell him every time our quarterback called a play, I'd have to tell Big Al, here, do this. We're cross-blocking here, and I'm going back, or you're pass-blocking, or you cut this, you know, whatever it was. And I'd have to do this in the 3 or 4 seconds it took us to go from the huddle up to the line. So I was like his tutor. So I kind of got stuck there, which was fine. I totally understand what I was doing. And I've always said, you know, Al eventually went on a ride to Tennessee. And he had lasted about a year. And I always thought, man, if you'd have given me that 6'4", 240-pound body, as opposed to a 6'1", 205-pound body in high school, I would have done some damage. But anyway, God rest his soul, Al passed away a few years ago. And it's a great memory for me. So when I got to play defense, though, Katie barred the door. Forget it. I was on a mission to practice dentistry, if at all possible, on the opposing quarterbacks and bird legs on the other side of the ball. And I loved it. So once that was my senior year, when I went into college, no more offense, strictly defense, time of my life. And of course, when I went to semi-pro football, I played defensive end there for, like I said, 5 years. And it just was a way for me to do a couple of things. One is, I love the game. I love the concept of the game. I like the contact of the game. I love the lessons of the game. I love the camaraderie of the game, the teamwork, the grit and the gristle and the push and the pull and the dirt and all that goes along with football. I was made for that. Pretty fair baseball player. Didn't play a whole lot of baseball, if at all, in high school. Played a little bit afterwards, but football was the thing for me. So all this is a setup to tell you why I felt like I was 12 years old about, I don't know, half hour ago. When I was a kid growing up, there was only, what, 4 or 5 channels on TV? 2, 5, 7, 9, 11, but there was no sports on 11. Every now and again, if you were lucky in Chicago, you got UHF, which is channel 32, but that was only at night. And somewhere right around the time I was 10, 11, 12, maybe 13, I was watching a football game in my parents' room upstairs on a Sunday on a little Sears television set, black and white TV, and it was the game of the week. And it was the Minnesota Vikings playing the Los Angeles Rams in Minnesota. And I'm closing my eyes right now, recalling it as if it was just yesterday, but it was a half a century ago. Laying on the bed, snowing outside. It's snowing in Minnesota. This is before they got, you know, kind of cheesy and were playing indoor arenas. This was outside in the snow, cold, the whole deal. And I'm watching the game. And at one point, they're talking about this guy, David Deacon Jones. And they're going on and on about how this would have been around 1970, somewhere in there, right in that area. And they were going on about Deacon Jones was the Minister of Defense. He was the greatest defensive end at that time in the NFL. And they started showing his like little highlights before the game was going on. And I just wasn't, who is this man? Who's the Deacon? What is this all about? And I sat up in bed and I just was like, oh my God, like this guy was like the ultimate warrior kind of guy for me. And I remember, you know, again, this is before they had all the packages that they sell now, the sports packages where they go in depth and interviews and stuff. But there was just one little part of their little reel that they showed that was, they were talking to Deacon Jones on the sideline. And by this time, he'd been in the league 10, 12 years, somewhere in there. And he starts talking about that football was the greatest thing for him because it got him out of poverty. It got him out of being a nobody. It got him from a little town in Florida and a little college to this superstardom, and that football was the game that allowed him to do that. And I was enamored with this concept. Like, how is this? What is this? Again, I'm just a kid, so I'm wide open like a billboard, right? And over time, of course, Deacon Jones, depending on who you ask, became the greatest defensive end in the history of the National Football League. When you hear, and listening to football now, when you hear somebody get sacked, when a quarterback gets sacked, Deacon Jones invented the term sack. I sacked the quarterback. And he says, it's like sacking a city back in the days of Romans. You know, you sack up this and you sack that. So he coined the term. And I think he'd been playing for many years before they even started counting sacks. So I don't care about Lawrence Taylor and the rest of these guys. They're all pretty good, but nobody had more sacks than Deacon Jones. I don't care what anybody says. So I watched him as a young man and was just enamored with that. Well, that Christmas, my dad, Santa Claus, sorry, or my dad, I got one of those electric football games. And it was, you know, this is where the little men, and you turn it on and they got little pads on their feet and all the men vibrate and they're vibrating around in a pile and really nothing happens. It was a lot of fun, but nothing really happened. But it was the Rams and the Cowboys. And I thought, where's Deacon Jones at? Which one's Deacon Jones? Well, I, of course, made Deacon Jones. And he was part of the great front four called the Fearsome Foursome. Deacon Jones, Rosie Greer, the incredible Merlin Olsen, and Lamar Lundy were the original Fearsome Foursome for the Rams. And they just wreaked havoc in the NFL. So I took time. And I took four guys on that little thing with the little helmets on and stuff. They were really cool. They're painted just like the Rams helmets and the Dallas Cowboys helmets. And I painted Olsen and Greer and Lundy and Jones on their backs with a little tiny paintbrush and put their numbers on it. Deacon Jones, number 75. Merlin Olsen, 74. Played next to each other. And so this was like a thing for me. And all I know is that when by the time I got to start playing football at more often at levels, something about what Deacon Jones had said was like the driving force in me when I went to play. Like, this game will give you exactly what you need if you can take it. And it was apparent to me that didn't end when the whistle was over. You kind of just kept going with it and other parts of your life. So you can imagine, to some greater or lesser degree, first of all, I have zero in common, except for the love of football, with Deacon Jones. Back then I was a little white kid in Chicago growing up, and I'm watching a 6'5", 265-pound black man from playing in Los Angeles, California. There's nothing there except the admiration for the way he played the game. And boy, oh boy, did he play the game. But there's some stuff in all of that as well over the years as I've pulled back. I never once thought if he was black or white or red or yellow. Didn't care. I don't care if he had teeth or didn't have teeth, hair, didn't have hair. None of that matter. What mattered was when he put that helmet on, he did something better than anybody else at that position. And that got ingrained in me. Now, listen, I didn't get a chance to see a whole lot of Rams games living in Chicago. Because, you know, when they were on, we could catch it. You'd have to read the TV guide to see who was playing in the games. And every now and again, if they played the Bears or the Vikings or even the Packers, we might get that game in Chicago. So it wasn't like I sat and studied film with this guy, but he was just something in me. At some point, I think it was the library at my grammar school. Might have been high school, actually. First year of high school, I would guess, 1973. I think Deacon Jones retired in 72, 73, and wrote a book. And the book is called Life in the Pit. It's a hardcover book, and I found it in the library at my high school, which is one of the few times I actually went to the library at my high school for anything, besides, you know, the end of the day for a study call or anything like that. But I got the Life in the Pit book, and guess what? I've never returned it. I still have it. You know how much money I would owe in back late fees if they gigged me for that? And then the book expanded on Deacon Jones for me and his life and how he grew up in Eatonville, Florida, and just dirt, rag-ass poor. I mean, this guy really started with nothing. Just astonishing. And those are the kind of things that over time have become like a foundational piece for all the work I do in radio. It's not where you start. It's where you finish. It is not where you start. It's definitely where you finish that matters the most. And when he was in high school, I remember reading he had a lump in his thigh, and it turns out to be a tumor. He has this removed. There was this incident when he was 14 years old. He witnessed a carload of white teenagers hitting an elderly black woman with a watermelon, and she died later from her injury. And Deacon Jones recalls the injustice, and there was no police investigation. And he quote said, "Unlike many black people then, I was determined not to be what society said I was," he recounted later. "Thank God I had the ability to play a violent game like football. It gave me an outlet for the anger in my heart." Man, did that resonate with me. I don't know what it's like to be someone who is of color and oppressed. I haven't. I've had no experience of that at all myself. I can friends of mine who related to me, but not myself. But the things that made me angry in my life that I didn't think I could express anywhere else but the football field, that I understood. And so the way Deacon Jones was actually found, he was overlooked for the most part, and there was an NFL film scouting team out, and he was actually kind of discovered by accident. The Rams were scouting some running backs, and they found this defensive tackle on film outrunning the backs that they were scouting. And it turned out that he was drafted in the 14th round of the 1961 draft by the Rams. And, of course, as I mentioned, earned a starting role as defensive end in Merlin Olsen to give the defensive line, you know, its nickname of the fearsome foursome. So his early years, the only thing I can take away from that was this ability he had to transform something. He could have went left, but he went right. And I've seen this so many times. Once you make a decision on something internally, somehow, some way, some shape, some form, the universe conspires to make that true, make that be. It may not be exactly how you think it is, but there's something there to look into when you make those decisions. And he said, "I'm not going this way." He stuck with football. Quote, discovered by accident, becomes the greatest NFL defensive end of all time. I mean, 8 times Pro Bowl, 5 times first team All-Pro, 3 times second team All-Pro, 2 times NFL Defensive Player of the Year, 75th anniversary All-Star team, 100th anniversary All-Star team, All-Decade team in the 60s, and the Rams retired number 75. Played 191 games. And when he was finished playing football, I thought maybe then I could get a chance to connect with this guy. And I've had, in my radio career, and my speaking career and my writing career, I've had opportunity to spend time with some amazing human beings. Jerry Kramer, who played for the Lombardi Packers, the first 2 Super Bowls, and for 10 years, is like my grandfather, basically. And, you know, we check on each other 3-4 times a month, and we've done a lot of projects together, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. And, you know, if I could eventually become a guy like him at 85, I'll have it made. But there was something about Deacon Jones that I thought, I might have some things to learn from this guy. And I watched him over the years do some, you know, broadcasting stuff and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then he created the Deacon Jones Foundation. And the whole idea of the foundation was to get kids out of the areas of the city that were difficult and give them a head start, a leg up, a lift up, something up that he never had. And he passed away in 2013, which was a sad thing for me. I never did get to meet him and never even crossed paths. But that Deacon Jones Foundation still goes on today. They do all this NFL artwork, and they make put all this money up. It's fantastic. So for years, well, let me just, one more thing I forgot to say. I was so enamored with Deacon Jones. When I graduated from 8th grade at Belding Grammar School in Chicago, you are supposed to, they come up like the eighth graders leave something for the seventh graders. It's like a will. It's kind of a silly thing, but you have to leave something to somebody. To this day, I remember I left Deacon Jones to this other kid that was behind me. And, you know, who the hell puts Deacon Jones in that position, right? But that's how much what he did and how he played meant to me. So for years, I've been looking for a certain type of helmet to add to my collection. Another guy who I admire greatly and I have met a few times and spent a little bit of time with is a guy named Jack Youngblood, who also played for the Rams and one tough hombre, SOB, amazing human being, also from Florida. And I had his helmet sitting here in my office for about 5 years. But I've been looking for this Deacon Jones helmet. And to me, you know, I collect this stuff as reminders. I've given so much away. I've had more stuff. You know, to this day, I have this Walter Payton limited edition lithograph signed by Walter. I actually worked on the project with him in 93. And, you know, I gave them all away or helped raise money for people or whatever. That's one of the things I wish I would have kept. But so I've had all this stuff. And I've learned a long time ago, I don't own any of it. I'm just kind of keeping an eye on it for a while. I think it needs to go somewhere. So anyway, the exact helmet I was looking for pops up about a year ago on one of the online platforms. And I've been keeping an eye on it. Look, this is very cool stuff to me. It's just a reminder of younger days, if you will. But I'm not going to spend a ridiculous amount of money to get this. And it was a certain helmet. It's called a Proline helmet. It's an actual NFL-approved helmet. I wouldn't be wearing it anytime soon. But it's got all the padding and stuff you need. And it's not an authentic replica like a lot of them are. And it had to be signed by Deacon Jones, and it had to have a certificate of authenticity and the rest I could work with. So a year ago, I've been watching this thing bounce around. It was sold twice, and then it wasn't sold. And it was sold, then it wasn't sold, and I just let it be. So about 3 weeks ago, I happened to clear out all the bookmarks on my computer. I was going through and seeing what I needed, what I didn't. So much stuff for radio. And I came across the website that where I originally saw this, and I clicked it. It was still for sale. So, sent the guy a text message. We chatted a few times. What this guy wanted originally and what I paid for it are vastly different amounts and in my favor. And so I knew it was shipping, and all of a sudden it became Christmas for me. I was waiting and anticipation and excitement. And I was literally in my office when the doorbell rang, and I ran to the door like I was 12. I kid you not. And I have, you know, I don't have a reason to move that fast anymore for the most part. I got to the door. There's this huge box there. My name's on it. I rip it open, and sure enough, there it is. It's right there. It's right there. It's in a glass case now. Deacon Jones signed, Hall of Fame, 1980. Certificate of Authenticity, official Proline helmet, under glass. It replaces Jack Youngblood's, which I'm actually going to donate to my high school, which will be auctioned off at an event we do every year. This year it'll be in September, and we can make some money off that Jack Youngblood helmet, and Deacon Jones's takes its place inside that cube. And I, quite frankly, you know, this other thing I wanted to talk about all of a sudden didn't matter. The only thing that is connected to it is what is something is worth. You know, obviously there are people who think that they need to be paid $100 to get a COVID shot because then they're okay with it, whatever. You know, I've watched this show for years called Pawn Stars, where people go to this pawn shop in Las Vegas and they bring all this crazy stuff in and they're sure it's worth all this money. It turns out it's not. But this is an item that has really less to do with the actual helmet itself. As I started to sit here with it and just look at this helmet right in my office, and what it was like to be 12 again for just a little while. Here in the 21st century, I'll be 63 in December. And for that 15 minutes, I literally was 12. And I thought, man, I haven't felt like this in years over something that made me excited, that made me feel good. It's an inanimate object. And to a lot of people, it doesn't mean anything. And that's okay. That's totally good. And if you're not a football fan or haven't played the game or whatever, you're thinking, what the hell is he doing on this podcast? What I'm talking about is finding the things that bring you joy. Finding the little things that can make you happy and excited in the midst of all this chaos. And for me, at this particular time, it's a Deacon Jones helmet. It is so cool. And it's not going anywhere for a while. But that's really what it boiled down to me. You know, the Life 2.0 podcast is about taking life to another level, especially in the turbulence that we live in now. Looking for that space in between the turbulence where there's clear and clean and level and quiet air because we need it. And so today when that doorbell rang and that big box was out there, this guy that sold to me, he just buys and sells helmets. But to me, he had no idea that I was 12 years old when I wished I could have something like this. There was no such thing. I mean, it just wasn't the market like it is now. I've been waiting 50 years to feel like this again. That's the lesson of this podcast. So whatever it is, for me, it's Deacon Jones today. God rest his soul. Maybe for you, it's just planting flowers or being outside or washing your car or collecting a car. Doesn't matter what it is. I realized that I had become crusted over once again. I work a lot and I look at a computer too much. You know, when I do the bridge show, I tape those. I tape 7 shows in 4 days. It's quite a pace we keep. And either in between the taping of the shows or after the last show, especially now as the weather has gotten nice out, I always go out and stand in the backyard and I just look up at the stars for just a few minutes before I go to sleep, just to remind myself that there's more going on than just radio and production deadlines and all the other stuff that has to happen for this to work. And today, I was reminded of that, not because I was looking up, but because I was looking back at my life when I was 12 and all the ways that I felt back then. And I think, man, if we can find ways, even every day, to do one thing just to remind ourselves of that, then all of a sudden the burden is lifted and the pain is eased and the stress is pushed back and things are a little bit lighter. Because if I look at the way life is now compared to 1969, 70, 71, 72, that whole area then when I was just a kid, football was becoming my thing. It's very different in many ways and in some ways it isn't. The biggest way that it's different is the proliferation of information we can't do a damn thing about. I don't like it. I don't think it's good for us. We need to be really judicial of how we take that in, just like food. If you're ingesting too much stuff that's not good, you're going to get sick. And if we watch this information and news we can't use, I think the same thing happens to us. I think we were better off when we had 4 channels, quite frankly. Matter of fact, I have antennas on 2 of my TVs where I watch just antenna TV. Do you remember the days when antenna TV was the thing and everybody, cable's coming, you're going to have all these choices. Now we got all these choices of what people. I want an antenna. I just want 4 choices. That's my brain most of the time. So a bit of a rant. I hope you find some value in there. More importantly, I hope that you go out and find something today or something finds you to remind you of what it feels like to be young again. Hey, Deacon Jones, wherever you're listening, thank you. Until next time, take care. Safe travels. Adios.